Revelation chapter 8. That's where we left off last week, where we'll pick up this week. I will go ahead and add again, if you don't make it every Sunday for this class, if you want to catch up, if you missed something, you can go back out to the church's Facebook page and find these lessons under sermons. Don't ask me exactly how to get there. I know how to get there myself, but I couldn't tell you how to get there. But it's not that difficult to find. If you want to catch up on some of these, you can. They post them out there. Typically, Sundays will be on there by Tuesday or Wednesday of that same week. But it's good to have those if you need to catch back up. Revelation chapter 8, verse 1. We've already seen several things happen now so far in Revelation, just as a really short recap. We've seen Jesus step forth when no man either in heaven or on the earth or under the earth had the authority to take the book and to open the seals thereof. But we saw Jesus step forth having the authority to open the book with the seven seals. So we've seen the seven seals already opened. We've seen Jesus take that. We've seen him open those seven seals. We see what's coming. Now we're starting to, in chapter 8, we're going to start to see the trumpets. We're going to start to hear the trumpets sound in chapter 8. And we found last week in chapter 8, verse 1, I didn't say it last week, excuse me, but I did tell a couple of folks after class, we found in Revelation chapter 8, verse 1, that there will be, listen to me, there will be no women in heaven. I saw a couple heads snap up. Read with me, if you will, Revelation chapter 8, verse 1. And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of a half an hour. There will be no, there can't be women in heaven if there's going to be silence for a half an hour. It just cannot happen. Now, of course, you know I'm just joking, just to get a little bit of fun out of there. But I did hear that somewhere a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, I need to bring that out. But last Sunday just didn't seem like the Sunday to do it. But so just in jest. But there's a space here when he opens opens this seventh seal. There's silence there. And we looked last week that it's kind of the calm before the storm. It's moving from patience and perseverance into judgment is what we see here. And all kind of stand, all these gathered around here, we see that the churches are represented here. We see the beasts are around about the throne. The 24 elders are, of course, around about the throne. All the angels are around about the throne. And yet there's silence for the space of about a half an hour. I believe that's our time, a half an hour. Doesn't say that God commands it. But I think all these folks that are gathered around that throne in this great worship scene see the awe of the wrath that's about to come upon the face of the earth and all of its inhabitants. I think they see all this progression that's happening. They see what's happening here, what's about to take place, and they stand in silence. It's a very solemn scene. It's a pause of action, a calm again before the storm. We notice here, if you notice, and all the rest of the seals and the trumpets and what we've seen so far, there was always a come and see. You don't see that in this verse, in chapter 8, verse 1. It's not a come and see. The seal is already open. Now there's silence in heaven for the space of about a half an hour. The steps from mercy to judgment are slow and reluctant and measured. And we'll continue to see that when we go through the trumpets. Not all this happens at one time. There's a pause between each. Each one will get progressively worse. We'll see that as we start into these trumpets, depending on how far we get. But we'll see it regardless. But we see here now all of a sudden the silent marks the transition from grace into judgment. Judgment is coming. If you don't get anything else from today's lesson, understand that judgment is coming. If you believe in God, you have to believe in what's happening here in Revelation. Don't symbolize it away. Don't water it down. Don't say, well, it's only going to happen in certain parts of the earth. This is going to happen worldwide. Judgment is coming. Now, we're accountable for our sins today. If you're saved, you know, we have to confess our sins, but our sins are already paid for. It doesn't give us a free ticket to go live however we choose. We pay a penalty for our sin. But judgment for those that have rejected Jesus Christ is coming upon the earth. And we see it coming here in stages. So the silences happen. Again, I hope you're not mad at me. I was just joking with you about the silence in heaven. But we see the seventh seal is opened, and now all of a sudden we'll get into the trumpets. So in verse 2 of Revelation chapter 8, "And I saw the seven angels which stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets." Now there's the sevens that we see and we've been hearing so much about. Seven meaning a number of fullness or completeness, sometimes perfection, but always fullness and completeness, at its most, if you will. So the seven angels here, and these seven angels represent the completeness of the Holy Spirit in all of His works. So that's what they really represent. They stood, they're standing before God, prepared to carry out a work, to carry out a plan, an assigned task that God has for them. And they were given, they were handed seven trumpets. So we're moving into the day of wrath here. The seven trumpets, the seven bowl or vial judgments, all these sevens are coming. Fullness and completion, unmeasured, but complete in their efforts and their purpose. Everything, remember, God has a purpose. This is His complete purpose coming to fruition, a step at a time. Now, as the trumpets of Israel, if you'll remember, the trumpets of Israel were used at the Battle of Jericho. And what happened at the end of that? You know the story. You're familiar with the story. The trumpets were sounded, and what happened? The walls came tumbling down. You surely remember that song as a kid. And the walls came tumbling down. So will upon the sounding of these seven trumpets, also will the world walls begin to tremble and to fall down. When this is all complete, stages at a time. So a lot of similarities here. We talked about some of the similarities going back into Genesis and Exodus and some of those things. We'll see those as we go step by step. And there's some more details that we'll bring out as we go on. But the seven angels representing the Holy Spirit here completely standing before God, ready to carry out their plans. They're given seven trumpets, each one a trumpet. The angels here are not Christ. Let's look in verse 3. "And another angel came and stood by the altar, having a golden censer. And there was given unto him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne." This angel too. Now some people say, well, this angel is Jesus Christ. No, it isn't. Jesus is no longer representing it here as an angel. He's not an intercessor between God and man, because the church is already in heaven. But he has a different purpose here. So there's another angel with some different rank of authority. We really don't know what that is. He's standing, or he's presenting himself ready before the altar, before God. So he also has a task that is assigned for him to carry out. Now keep in mind, this brings us pretty close, give or take one way or the other, and I can't say specifically, this is getting us pretty close to the midpoint of the tribulation period. So this is somewhere right around that 3.5-year period. There's a few other things got to happen to kind of solidify that. We'll get into that when the time comes. But we're pretty well right around, we're just almost to the midpoint of the tribulation period when all this starts to take place. So the golden altar here is the place where prayer is offered. Christ is not in the place. We already said that he's not in the place of intercession before the golden altar. He is now upon the throne. Now, the incense here is likened unto prayer and is a type of prayer. If you look over, and we won't look it up, but write down Psalms chapter 141, verse 2. And David speaks there of incense. He says, "Let my prayer be set forth before thee as incense." So its prayer resembles or kind of symbolizes here, goes hand in hands with the prayer and the incense, go together. So the prayers are going before the golden altar, and I think that's one main altar here in heaven. And keep in mind, we saw, I think it was in chapter 6, I think, we'll get to it later on, I think it's chapter 6, we saw the saints were there under the altar, and they had a prayer, they had a request. So keep in mind, there's one major altar here where all of this is done. The mercy seat of Christ here is represented here along with this altar, hand in hand with this altar. And it's a golden altar. There's an offering here that being offered at the altar. It's an offering of a sweet-smelling incense, and the prayers of the saints are offered. That was back in, here's my notes, Revelation chapter 6, verses 9 through 11 is when the prayers of the saints were offered up. And they had a prayer. Do you remember what their prayer was? Just briefly, kind of paraphrasing, do you remember what their prayer was? Yeah, he said, "Oh Lord, how long? How long do we have to wait before you bring those that brought harm to us to judgment. That's basically what they said. Now, that's not it word for word, but that's pretty much what they said. We're going to see that answer to that prayer very shortly. Very shortly. But there's prayer, there's incense going on here that's being offered to God in on behalf of the saints. They're standing at the altar. There was given over them much incense. In temple worship, when a censer or a saucer of incense was poured over live fire coals, as the sweet odor ascended, people prayed, and their prayers were said to ascend up before God. And that's what we see happening here. That's what we see happening here in this verse. Moving on to verse 4. And the smoke of the incense. Those are vapors. You know what it is? The big thing now is vaping. And I don't know what people get out of that. It's none of my business. I don't get in the middle of it. But if you've ever been around anybody or walked by somebody that's doing that, there's a lot of vapor. I mean, they named it right. There's a lot of vapor. There's an incense. There's a smell that comes with that. But these here, it's kind of the same thing, but a lot different. And the smoke of the incense or the vapors, which came with the prayers of the saints, ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. So they combined here to make an acceptable fragrance before God to receive the granting of their prayers and petitions. The prayer is going to be answered because of Jesus Christ. Every prayer that you pray now as a Christian is interceded by Christ and then delivered by Christ to God. Because it says in the Bible that sometimes when we don't even know what to utter, Christ utters our prayers on our behalf. Right? We all good with that? Now Christ is in a different position, but these incenses, these smoke from this vapors combined with the incense and the prayers of the saints will all be going to Christ. Our prayers will be answered because of Jesus Christ, because of what Jesus has done. So prayer is going to be answered because of Jesus Christ. Let's look at another little section here. The prayers of the saints and the vapors are going up before God out of the angel's hands. It appears that the trumpet judgment come as divine responses to the prayers uttered by the saints as the incense is poured out upon heaven's golden altar before the throne of God. As the sweet incense, and I'm reading here out of the Orange Book, if you all have it on page 145, as the sweet incense and prayers of the saints arise before the throne, the seven judgments begin to sound or blast. A judgment tempo, a fury begins to fall on the earth. As a judgment of David's imprecatory prayers for judgment upon his enemies, the saints also pray imprecatory prayers before God's throne. And you'll find that from on David's behalf in Psalms chapter 59, verses 13 through 15. So things begin to go. Things begin to move. The saints were crying out, "How long, O Lord? Now is the time." Now is the time when that answer to that prayer begins. Can you see that? Do you understand that? They've been asking, "How long, O Lord?" And wherever verses those are, somebody wants to look those up, or I can look them up real quick. Revelation chapter 6, verse 9 through 11. Is where we were with that. 6, 9 through 11. And I looked. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, "Oh, how long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth?" And of course, when white robes were given to them, whatnot. But we see that about to take place. Vengeance, unimaginable wrath, unimaginable tragedy, controlled tragedy, but tragedy. Unimaginable punishment is about to come on the earth and the inhabitants of the earth that have denied the faith of Christ. Unimaginable. We see catastrophes all the time. I don't watch the news, but still sometimes I hear about things on the news. I hear about earthquakes. I hear about fires. I hear about different storms. You hear about the death of storms, even cold weather storms that come across take lives. This is going to be something that we have never seen the likes before. We already talked about 1/5 of the world's population is going to perish early on. We're going to get into it now where we're going to see things happen in thirds, starting with nature, going towards nature and plants, and then going to sea life, and then coming in the third trumpet to mankind himself. Unimaginable wrath and punishment. You say, why? Because man has denied Jesus Christ. And the day of that has been postponed. The day of the wrath has been slow to come. But the day is coming our direction. And when it happens, it will be an unimaginable catastrophe upon the face of the earth like the earth has never seen before. Never, not even close. All the catastrophes that we've seen, nothing is going to come to what this will be. Any question or comment so far? I wish I could imagine. I hope you can, but I wish I could imagine just how terrible, I think I do, I wish I could imagine just how terrible this will be. There'll be no place to hide. Keep in mind, these men have already been great men, seven different kinds of men there, the great and the mighty and the strong and the proud. They're hiding in rocks. They're hiding in caves. They're praying for, who are they praying to? They didn't believe in God, but they're praying for the rocks to fall on them, to hide them, to take their lives. Unimaginable terror. No place safe. You say, well, I'm in Grafton, West Virginia. I'm in Independence. Well, I'm in the hills. The hills will eventually become flat. There will be no place for this to hide, for it to hide from this terrible wrath that's come. Now, the church doesn't have to worry about it because the church is where? The church is in heaven. But this is coming. This will be an event that will be no place to escape from this event. You can't dig a hole deep enough to hide from God. And the angel took the censer in verse 5. And the angel took the censer and filled it. How much was in it? It was filled with fire of the altar and cast it into the earth. And there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and an earthquake. You're hearing a lot about earthquakes here all of a sudden in Revelation. If you'll remember, the high priest of Israel, when he went into the Holy of Holies, took a censer with him as he carried the blood, the sacrifice, into the tabernacle, the Holy of Holies. He took a censer with him. Here we see, and the tribulation saints had already prayed. We'd already seen how long before the ones that took their lives, the ones that punished them, how long before their judgment of their sins. Now that comes. Here the great tribulation really kicks off. Again, we've talked about those being hidden in the rocks. I think those would be some of the same voices, some of those same voices that were begging for the rocks to fall on them and take them out of the situation that we were in. I think they'll hear those voices. But the voices and thunderings and lightning denotes the coming storm of God's judgment, the earthquake, a shaking of the current way. Things are going to happen. Things are going to be completely changed when this is all said and done, and it will happen in phases as we go. A shaking of the earth. There's no man alive that can control anything when the earth begins to shake under your feet. God created that earth, and God has the power and the authority to shake it however he well chooses. And there'll be a couple of great earthquakes coming our way before we get through Revelation. I don't think the earthquakes that we see in today's time are any kind of a filling of that prophecy whatsoever. These are going to be great, never-before-measured earthquakes upon the earth. It's going to let folks know that God is in control and God's judgment is coming. Terrible storms, thunder, and lightning. You see the lightning, but it's listed that way, but you always see the lightning before you hear the thunder, don't you? Now, sometimes it's really close together if the storm's really close. So don't let that kind of fool you here the way they're listed. But thunders and lightnings and an earthquake, a shaking of the current situation. Things will not continue the way they are. Things in our world today cannot continue the way they are. Now we see them getting progressively worse, don't we? And you can name your cliche there however you want to. Sin in general, whether that's sin or abortion or lifestyles or drugs or alcohol, whatever those sins are, we cannot continue on the same path that we are on. We cannot continue going downhill as a country, as a nation, as a world, and not expect God to have judgment upon us. It's coming. It's inevitable. Here we see that judgment, the wrath. Do you believe in God? Do you believe that God had the power to raise Lazarus from the dead? How many of you have you believed that God had the power to raise Lazarus from the dead? If he wouldn't have called Lazarus out of the grave specifically, if he had just said, dead, raise up from the grave, I think everybody that would have been dead at that time would have raised up. He called Lazarus specifically, although he had the power to raise any man or woman child from the dead. If you can believe he had the power to raise the dead, you better believe the power. He has the power to shake this world and to bring his wrath upon it. How mad would you be if you gave your son or daughter, we're just using it as an example here, how mad would you be if you gave your son or daughter as a sacrifice to the world and the largest percentage of the world's population denied it? You'd be mad, wouldn't you? I would be. I'd be fit to be tied. Now, this is God. God sent his son, Jesus Christ, to the world to pay our sin debt. And yet the large majority of the world has denied that. Don't think that God isn't going to have his final wrath upon those that have rejected his son. Now, he's been slow to wrath. We've seen that, and it continues here. He could make this happen just one fell swoop, done and over with. But he's yet slow. All these things have a purpose, and they're to either soften or harden mankind's heart. So the angel here takes the censer. The censer here, the fire of the altar, always burning, signifying purity and cleansing. They're at that fire of the altar. And casts it into the earth. The censer is hurled upon the earth. The prayers ascended as incense. Now we have the answer to the prayer coming to the earth. In verse 6, and the seven angels, which had the seven trumpets, prepared themselves to sound. The silence is over. The 30-minute silence is over with. The prayers of the saints have been heard. The order is issued to prepare to blow these trumpets. The angels come to attention, and at the blowing of the trumpets, the divine wrath is visited upon rebellious man that has turned his back on God. How many of you remember the plagues in the Old Testament? Remember the test? Now, those were plagues, were they not? Somebody mentioned a couple of them. I don't know them all off the top of my head. I'd have to sit and think about it. The frogs were one. Locusts was a popular one. Water turned to blood. What were some of the others? The firstborn. Do you really believe those things happened the way they said they were happened? Now, you think they were literally the locusts came and devoured everything? You think the frogs, I don't got nothing against frogs, but I don't want millions and millions of them running around the field, jumping all over the place. You think those were literal frogs? I mean, let's just talk here a minute. Do you think those were literal plagues just the way they said they were? Then why do we have so much, and I'm not saying we here, but why does the world have so much trouble believing that these plagues that are about to come are going to be literal plagues? I don't think there's a lick of signifying here. I think they're going to be just as literal as they're called out to be. Just as plain and simple as they're called out to be. If you can believe them in the Old Testament, we have no reason not to believe that that will be literal here. There'll be literal plagues, not symbolic, but literal. The method today of evaporating or watering down the meaning of Scripture by calling it symbolic is just as bad as denying the inspiration of the Word of God. In other words, saying, well, it says there's going to be hail and fire, but that really doesn't mean there's going to be a bad storm. It says hail and fire mingled with blood. It's going to be hail and fire, and guess what? It's going to be mingled with blood. Now, we've never seen that before. I don't want to see it. I won't have to see it. You won't either if you're saved. But there'll be literal things. Don't water it down. John was there. He's told us before, and I, John, saw. Why was he there? Why did he see? To write it down so that we could have a clear picture of what's about to happen. Take it for what it is. Take it the way that John wrote it. Don't worry about all this symbolism at this point in time. They're preparing themselves. I don't know what they got to do to prepare, but they're preparing themselves to do God's work. I'm trying to read my notes as I go. All right, I guess I got them scattered everywhere. First trumpet, chapter 8, verse 7. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled or mixed with blood, and they were cast upon the earth, not the angel, but the hail and fire mingled with blood were cast upon the earth. Then the third part of trees was burned up, and all green grass was burned up. I can't stop and I can't read this without thinking of the hailstorm that hit in Taylor County. What was that? About 4 or 5 years ago? 2016. I didn't see it. I had already went home. I'd already made it home. And when I got home, Preston County, I mean, the sky was almost black. And the whole way home, I heard on the radio about this big hailstorm coming. I mean, it was possible to hit in Grafton surrounding areas. But I got home, and it was black. And I thought, this is going to be bad. And I got a call. My wife called me, and she said, we're having a hailstorm here. She, for whatever reason, they had an after-school thing where I think it was teacher, parent-teacher. I don't remember what it was, but they had an activity going at school. So she was stuck there. And she called me, and she said, we've got hail here at the school. I said, really? She said, yeah. She said, I think the storm's coming your way. I said, well, how bad is it? She said, we've got baseball-sized hail. I said, woman, you have lost your mind. I said, you have not got baseball-sized hail. She said, I'm telling you. She said, I can see it out the door, out the window. She said, we've got baseball-sized hail. I said, well, what's it doing to the car? Her, being my wife, said, oh, it don't look like it's doing anything. I said, now, wait a minute. If you got baseball-sized hail, you got a problem. It's going to be banging stuff up. She said, well, I don't know. She said, once it's all said and done, she said, we'll go out. She said, we'll take a look. She said, but it don't really look that bad. I said, okay. It wasn't too long. She called me back, and she said, yeah, you were right. She said, we've got a problem. She said, the car is just beat to pieces. She said, it's knocked through the holes in the ceiling in places where they had skylights, I think over in the vocational center. That the building construction had knocked big holes in the lights. The greenhouse had great big holes in it. It had beat our poor Subaru to pieces. Even places on the A-pillar, I mean, where it's strong coming down around the windshield. I mean, there were dents in there, and the paint was knocking off of it. The glass was all busted up. The thing was all dented up. You couldn't even drive it home. Long story short, ours certainly wasn't the only car. Other places had houses, siding all beat up on it. They came and got our car and towed it and ended up totaling it. My daughter was in McDonald's for whatever reason. She was in McDonald's, which kind of caught the edge of the storm. That's the little red car I drive out there now. It's full of dents. I used to see a couple other cars out here in the parking lot that had dents all in it. They totaled it too. What am I saying? This was bad hail. I don't think we'd ever seen anything like that in the history of Taylor County that was ever recorded. Baseball-sized hail, and we saw the damage that happened. I mean, some houses took thousands of dollars worth of damage. Roofs were damaged. Cars were totaled. But out of all of that, it was miraculous. And maybe I just didn't hear it. But I didn't hear of one personal injury on that. Now, that's a miracle. Because baseball-sized hail hits you in the head, I got news for you. You're going to have a headache, and that's going to be best case. You're going to have a lot worse than that. It could be bad. That's life-threatening, baseball-sized hail. Now, it doesn't tell us here how large this hail is. We find when we get over to Revelation chapter 16, I think it's verse 21, we see hail coming that's about the size of a talent. That's 100-pound hail. Now, I can't imagine. Baseball-sized hail is bad enough. As I drove in that afternoon to come and get her because we couldn't drive the car, when I got out there to about where Lear Mine is, you begin to see the ditches covered with hail. Now, it was small hail, but the ground was literally from there going into Grafton was white with hail. The closer you got to the high school, the bigger the chunks of hail got. Baseball-sized hail. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when you're talking 100-pound hail, and we'll do some dimensions on that, 100-pound pieces of hail, solid pieces of ice, weighing 100-pound, coming hurling at the earth from the atmosphere, directly from the hand of God, 100-pound pieces of ice. Now, that's not going to just give you a headache. You probably ain't going to have a head after that hits you. But I thought that was just a point to make. I didn't hear of one, maybe you all did, but I didn't hear of one personal injury during that hailstorm. That was miraculous. Miraculous. But we see hail and fire coming together. Now, that's unusual. Usually you either see hail or you see fire. Because the two kind of go against each other, right? Hail is hard, frozen. Fire is hot and melting. But here we see hail and fire both coming together. Can only happen by God's power. Also mingled with or sprinkled with blood. Now, can you imagine what that's going to look like? Let's just suppose you were out in that storm, what you would look like with the hail coming pounding down around you, balls or gobs, I don't know how it'll come, but balls and gobs of fire coming down from heaven above. And then the spray of blood that's going to be coming with that. That's a pretty gruesome picture in my mind. Hail and fire mingled with or dispersed with blood coming down upon all inhabitants. Here, right here where we stand, it'll happen right out there in the parking lot. This building, if it's still standing at that particular time, will be affected by that hail, fire, and blood that's mingled in with it. Right out here in the parking lot. If they happen to be having some sort of a service, we won't be here now. The church is in heaven. But if they happen to be having some sort of service here, you'll be able to see it in the cars in the parking lot. You'll be able to see it affecting those trees that direction and that direction. What's the result of this? Again, this is directed towards nature. It kind of matches up with the plague on Egypt and Pharaoh there. But they were cast upon the earth, and one third of trees was burned up, and all green grass was burned up. Now, I don't know how God will measure that. I got no clue. Does it mean if you've got three trees in your front yard, one of them's going to get it and the other two won't? I don't know. But as an overall total, wherever God looks at it, whether it's by area, whether it's by count, I don't know. But one third of the trees will be affected by the hail and fire mingled with blood, and they will be burnt up. What's that mean? They'll be ash. They'll be gone. Nature is affected first. Why nature first? Because nature was the first thing put in place. First to come, first to go. Only God could do nature as nature is. We look at nature as kind of self-sustaining, self-preserving, but it's not. It was put into place by God and controlled by God. Now, we can have an adverse effect on nature, but nature continues on. But nature is the first one affected here. The first one affected. It's a literal judgment upon plant life in the same way that the seventh plague of Egypt was a literal plague in Exodus chapter 19, verses 18 through 26. There's similarity here, as we've already talked about, between the plagues of Egypt in Egypt and the trumpet judgments. This is no accident. If you go back, we already talked about that. We'll find that those are literal plagues, and we should take these plagues, take it for granted that Revelation will happen in the same fashion. When the hail came down on Egypt, we're told that the hail smote every herb of the field and break every tree of the field. It was 100% annihilation. In Exodus chapter 9, verse 25, here it will be one-third of the earth. And again, I don't know if it'll be by area. I don't know how it'll be, but when it says one-third, it will mean one literal third of the trees are burned up and the grass burned up. You say, well, that won't affect me much. Well, I got news for you. It won't affect you. If you're saved, you'll be in heaven. But it will have a definite impact upon nature, which man relies on nature. And you say, well, I don't rely on nature. I go get my stuff at Walmart. How long did that last when COVID hit? It didn't take too long for shelves to run out, did they? Toilet paper was the first to go. Don't ask me why. I got my own opinions, but that's neither here nor there. Shelves went out. Sustainment went out. We can't rely just on Walmart. Walmart will run out shortly enough, quickly enough, when the supplies stop coming in. Farmers, this is going to affect every farmer across the country. Every gardener across the country will be affected by this hail, fire, and blood. And that's just the first step. The first step. Don't know how long each one of these plagues will last, but the effect will carry on from trumpet to trumpet throughout this portion of a tribulation period. The second trumpet. The seas become blood. And the second angel sounded, and as it were, a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. And the third part of the sea became blood. And the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. And the third part of the ships were destroyed. Now let's look at that for just a second. Things are getting pretty rough here already. The intensity begins to increase slowly again, giving man an opportunity to still turn to God. But the intensity continually beginning to increase. Does it say that there's a great mountain burning with fire cast into the sea? It says, as it were. So it's something that either is or is the same as a great mountain on fire cast into the sea. We really don't know what it was. Why don't we know what it was? Because it wasn't revealed to John. But what we do know, something similar to or a great mountain burning with fire was literally cast into the sea. So it's starting here with salt water. Salt water and salt water animals. And a third part of the sea became blood. We begin to see a great death here. Great death of sea life. So much to the fact that one third of the sea life died. What happens when they die? Well, their blood goes back into the water. Their bodies go back into the water. That's what we see happening here. The third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. Exact language here. We don't know what it will be exactly, but this mountain represents something as literal and tangible as what we have in Jeremiah chapter 51, verse 25. Jeremiah 51, verse 25. The Lord is talking about Babylon. He says, behold, I am against thee, O destroying mountain, saith the Lord, which destroyeth all the earth, and I will stretch out my hand upon thee and roll thee down from the rocks and will make thee a burnt mountain. Whatever this is, this literal mass falls into a literal sea. One third of the sea becomes literal blood. One third of the living creatures in the literal sea die a literal death. Very simple, very plain. And also all one third of the ships, literal ships that are in the sea, will be destroyed. Now, I don't know how many ships are in the sea. I should have done some research and tried to find that number out. I wouldn't have a clue. God knows. And one third of those ships, wherever they are across the country, again, I don't know if it'll be lined up every third one. I got no clue. All I know is when it says one third of the ships will be destroyed, one third of the ships shall be wiped out. Wiped out. They thought the Titanic couldn't sink. That didn't last too long, did it? Y'all seen the movie? I never seen a movie take 3 hours. I think it was a 3-hour movie, and you knew what was going to happen. It took 3 hours to sink that boat in the movie. Titanic was unsinkable, but it sank. Some of these other ships that are, these destroyer ships that are supposed to be virtually indestructible will be destroyed. At the hand of God, one third destroyed. Very clear here. John's very specific with what we see. We got time to start the next one. Verses 10 and 11. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as if it were a lamp. And it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood. And many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. Now, a little bit of difference here on this one. We see the others are cast into the sea. First angel sounded, there came hail fired with and fire mingled with blood. They were cast upon the earth. Then we saw the second angel here, and a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. This one's a little bit different. Third angel sounded, and there fell a great star specifically from heaven. Now, we know the others came down. I'm not saying they came up. But this one came from heaven, directly from the hand of God is the way I look at that. Directly from God himself. This third trumpet sounds, and there's a great star burning as if it were a lamp. What's a lamp look like? Well, it's bright. It kind of reminds you of something here we would call a meteor. We've all heard of meteor showers, and maybe you've seen a meteor shower. You've probably seen a falling star. Once in a while you see one of those. What's it look like? It looks kind of like a really small comet. You kind of see it kind of red. It comes down. There's a little bit of a tail behind it. I think that's what this kind of shows us here, is a great star, a massive star, falling from heaven, burning as if it were a lamp. And it fell upon the third part of rivers. It's a torch lamp. It has a trail of fire like a meteor, directly coming from the hand of God. And things begin to get a little bit more down home, if you will. First, it was nature. Nature certainly has an effect on mankind, but mankind can kind of do some things to kind of still maybe fumble along for just a little while. Second one affected the creatures of the sea. I don't know about any of you, but I don't drink salt water. It's not something that affects us directly. It does have an effect and will eventually have a greater effect because of the harvest of the fish and whatnot. But the third one here begins to hit home. You might say through the first two, well, I live in the hills of West Virginia. Here we are again. I'm kind of one of those guys. I live in the hills of West Virginia. I've got a well. I've got a spring. I think there's four different springs up around my place. A couple of them run dry in August, a typical August. One of them has never went dry since I've been up there. But I can just live on that water. I've got water there coming from that spring. That's not what this says. This begins to hit home because it begins to have an effect on fresh water, the fresh water supply. It fell upon a third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. That's the fresh water. That's the wells. That's the springs. That's the head of these water supplies. It's fell. And the name of the star is called wormwood. It's a bitterness of poison. Beginning to get more intense as things goes on. Wormwood plant was used as medicinal in the Middle East. It was a plant that was about 18 inches tall at maturity and was extremely bitter. But here we see that it's going to be, the star is called wormwood. A third part of the waters become wormwood or bitterness of poison. And men that went ahead and partook of that water died because of that, because the waters were made poisonous. Well, whether that's an acidic poisoning, I don't really know. But regardless, it's poisonous. Man doesn't have fresh water. You cannot survive without some sort of fresh water. You can muddle by for a while. You can live off the dews of the leaves if you want to for a while. That's not going to get you very far because a third of the trees have already been burned up. The grass has been burned up. We're beginning to get crowded to a corner. Can you see that? Mankind is beginning to get pushed into a corner where he's on a little island. And he has, and not a literal island, but he's beginning to have things taken away from him a step at a time. Great signs coming to mankind. Some will turn to God. Others will curse God. And I can understand that, but they'll curse God. They'll recognize God, but won't turn their lives over to God. Kind of doesn't really add up. But this bitterness of poison here. Fresh water is essential for man and beast. And beast. Keep that in mind. Now, when the children of Israel crossed over the Red Sea, they came into Marah, M-A-R-A-H, if you remember that place, and the waters in Marah were bitter. Moses was directed to take a tree and cast it in the waters to make them sweet. Here in Revelation, the sweet waters are made bitter by a meteor or a star coming out of heaven. And again, you'll find out more about this wormwood if you look up Lamentations chapter 3, verse 15, and Ruth chapter 1, verse 20. This is a literal star. It's a meteor containing some sort of or being consumed of some sort of poison which will contaminate one-third of the earth's fresh water supply. Whether that water comes up out of the ground or where it comes from, one-third of the water will be contaminated by this poisonous wormwood. No escape. My place up there, if it falls into that one-third, if there's four major springs up there, one-third of them will be affected by the wormwood. I won't be here and have to worry about it, but somebody may be there. Your springs and wells will be the same. You say, well, I got city water. Where do you think it comes from? A lot of it comes from the dam up here at the Tigert River. Even out this direction still comes from the dam up there at the river. It's transferred out. Fresh water will be affected by this wormwood. So we see it here. First was plant life. The second was the sea creatures in the ships. Third one really hits man. Really hits man hard. We'll read one more, but we won't get too far into it. And the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars, so as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. How would you feel? Again, Christians won't be here, but how would you feel if you looked up And all of a sudden, the sun didn't look like it did. It just didn't look the same. A third part of it had been smitten. Now, I can't say exactly what that means. Does it mean looking at the sun, one third of it is now burnt out? Or does that mean it loses one third of its intensity? I really don't know what it means. It really doesn't matter. But it's going to be a visible effect upon the sun. It's going to be of one third less use to the earth, to nature, than it typically is. Again, whether it's dividing the thirds, I got no idea. John doesn't tell us. What he does tell us is that the moon is smitten one third part of it. One third, it's one third less effective to nature than what it was. Now, I don't know about you, but I like summertime. It could stay summer all year long, and I would be fine with that. All of a sudden, with this, if it happens in the summer, summer is one third less as warm as what it was. Everything revolves, everything in nature revolves around the heat that's provided by the sun. You ever stop and think about that when you look at this? The sun warms the earth. That's why it gets cold in the wintertime, because we're farther away from the sun. One third. So it's going to be a colder temperature. If it happens in the wintertime, that's going to be really rough. I don't know when it's going to happen, what season it'll happen in. But one third of the sun all of a sudden is smitten, of no use. Zero. One third part of the stars. What's that mean? You ever been out when it's been no stars at night? It's pretty dark, isn't it? Keep in mind, sin is enhanced in the dark. That's a thief in the night. Have you ever heard of that? Things are going to get worse. So the effect of these things, and we'll get into it more next week, the effect of these things are going to affect other things. It's like when you drop a little pebble into a thing of water. The impact is in the center, but the ripples roll out and out and out and out and out. And that's what's going to happen here. With each thing that happens, with each step that happens, it has ripple effects and affects different things down the line. Think about that as you begin to study in this verse and going forward what happens here. We'll come back to verse 12. Because it's going to get even worse as we continue on. Any question or comment on what we've covered so far? Aren't you thankful that God sent His Son, Jesus Christ, to this earth to save you of your sins and the wrath that's going to come to this earth? Aren't you thankful for that? You say, well, I ain't got much to be thankful for. Read through Revelation. If you ain't got nothing else to be thankful for, you got a lot of things right here to be thankful for. Because you will not have to go through this as a Christian. You will not go through the tribulation period. We'll be at home in heaven. We've all got loved ones that'll be here. We'll all have friends and relatives and acquaintances that'll go through some of this. But we don't have to be through that. We've got a lot to be thankful for. Let's close with a word.